Let's open our Bibles once again to Numbers 13 and 14. We're continuing our study in the fear of God, and we are now taking up the section in that on the fear of God, where we're going to talk about the fear of man, which is probably the biggest fear, the most common fear that people have, the fear of man. And we want to look here, as you probably could tell from what Stephen read, that you could see fear written all over that, right? And so we're going to be talking about that this morning. Because the Bible provides everything that we need in order to live godly lives, it makes sense that it would say a lot about fear. It says a lot about sinful fear. We're going to talk about that this morning. It also talks a lot about godly fear. We talked about that the last three messages where we were looking at trusting God. Fearing God means to trust God. That's a critical part of fearing Him, that is to trust Him. And trusting God is essential if we're going to fear God rightly. That section we did on trusting God has laid a foundation for us to be able to now look into the subject of the fear of man. And I wanted to do it in that order so that we would have this good foundation about trusting God, because the solution to not fearing men is to fear God or to trust God. And so it was intentional to take it in that order. We're going to spend several lessons on the fear of man because it's such an important, difficult issue that we all face to some extent, some more than others. And the Bible says a lot about the fear of men. God calls us to trust Him, and to not fear people. And so He tells us a lot in Scripture about the fear of man and what to do about that in order to help us deal with this problem that we all have as sinners. One of the places we find help on understanding what the fear of man is Proverbs 29:25, and you don't have to turn there, but it's a passage some of you are familiar with. The fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in Yahweh, in the Lord, will be exalted. What is a snare? What is he talking about here as a snare? Now, I want you to picture what Solomon is doing here. He's trying to get this graphic image in our minds where we're walking down this path, and someone has laid a snare for us. For example, it might be a rope, and they've made kind of a loop in it so that they could pull it tight. And what they do is they lay the rope out in the path there on the road and cover it over with a little bit of dirt so you can't see it. And so as you're walking along and you step into that circle, then they're hiding behind a bush over here with the other end of the rope and pull it. And of course, you know, pulls your legs together and you fall over and they rob you or whatever, kill you, whatever they want to do. And that's the picture that he's presenting. Now, does he say, my enemy has laid a snare for me? Well, sometimes Scripture says that. That's not what Solomon's talking about here. He's saying it's something in my heart that does that. And it's called the fear of man. The fear of man in my heart lays a snare for me. It's like that enemy, that thief, whoever it might be, who sneakily lays that trap for me. The fear of man lays a snare out for us. What is that then? What kind of snare is that? I mean, obviously it's not a literal rope or anything. What kind of snare is it? Well, what he's talking about here is how the fear of man changes the way we are able to respond to the situation that has brought fear to us, that has presented a temptation for us to fear in the wrong way. That snare, what it will do is lead us to act unwisely because we're not operating in faith. And that's going to be important to understand how when you're responding in ungodly fear, the fear of man, you're not operating in faith, and so you're going to act unwisely. You're not going to think clearly. Even though you may have in this situation of fear, adrenaline that is pumping through your veins, which normally should serve you well in a situation of fear, it doesn't here. What happens is you actually end up anxious. You are trembling on the inside. You're eaten up with dread. And what that will do is cause you to act unwisely. Now, it may actually terrify you and paralyze you. You're so scared. You're so terrified that you just are paralyzed. You may have been there before. You may have faced a situation where you were so terrified, and it might have been something that, you know, was a sporting event or something in that you're in, and you're just so terrified that, you know, I might mess up and everybody will laugh at me, or my teammates will be so disappointed in me. Or maybe you had to speak publicly, you know, in class or something, and or at work, or a lot of different situations you can find yourself in where you just get paralyzed. It's like you can't even move. You can't budge. But something else may happen. Instead of being terrified, you may just, like, you know, a bull in a china closet, you just blow through it. You're just like, I have to do something here, and you just do something. And that something is usually the wrong thing. That's, you know, because we're acting unwisely. We're not acting in out of faith. And so either way, we tend to make things worse than they already were. So a fearful situation just degenerates from there. But what Solomon says here is that while the fear of man brings a snare, the one who trusts in the Lord will be exalted or set on a high place. Some of your translations may say that you're put in a safe place. And the idea there is that you're put, if you will, up above whatever those snares might be. And so it prepares you to respond well. It prepares you to respond wisely. How? Because you're responding by faith. You see, you face the situation and you're looking at it, and it's scary, and it might scare anyone. But by faith, what you say is, but the Lord has me and this whole situation in His hands. He's wise, He's good, He's able to take care of me through this. And whatever He has ordained is what's going to happen, and I'm going to entrust myself to Him. Now you're able to think rationally, clearly. And you're not all eaten up on the inside and either paralyzed or just kind of closing your eyes and run, you know, and do something that makes things worse. You're able to actually rest in the Lord. You think more clearly. You're calm. It still may hurt. Whatever you feared may still happen. But you responded in faith with a clear mind. When we fear people, one of the things that we're afraid of is what they think about us. You know, we're afraid that their opinion of us may be less than flattering. Honestly, we all think pretty highly of ourselves. You know, we were talking about this morning on the way over in the car. You know, when someone, you know, beats themselves up, you know, and they seem to have, you know, low self-esteem and stuff like that, the problem is that they love themselves too much. That's the problem, you see. They think too highly of themselves. And you and I are that way, right? It's like, you know, okay, I do something and I mess up and then I beat myself up. Why? Well, I'm a better person than that. Right? That's us. And so, you know, since we're mad at ourselves because we really know that we're better than that. And so we're afraid that other people are going to think something less. That they're not going to think that we are the wonderful person that we really honestly think we are, even though we play these little games in our minds. You see, it's terrifying to think if you need other people to think well of you, this is a terrifying place to live in this world, right? Because every one of those people out there may think badly of you. They really might, and you know that. We may also fear their actions against us. I mean, there are people out there that will hurt you. They may be near you, but there are people who will hurt you, and you know that. And so we might fear them hurting us. We might fear their actions. We sometimes feel like we have a need to be accepted. And so what can happen is that people can reject us. People reject other people all the time. And you think about, you know, when you're single and you would like to have that special someone in your life. It's terrifying, isn't it? Because there may be somebody that you really like. And you think, wow, I think we would click well together. But they might reject you. You see how this happens? And I like one of the things that Ed Welch brings out, and I'm going to refer to him a number of times this morning because he has a lot of helpful information on it. But, you know, he's going along with all these different examples. And he says, okay, now if I haven't actually, you know, caught any of you yet, he said, what about evangelism? And he goes, gotcha. Right? I mean, there isn't one of us, if you're at all honest, who 100% of the time has 100% confidence to share the gospel with people around you. Now, you might be able to go do that in some other country, you know, because, okay, you blow it, you'll never see them again, right? But what about your neighbor? What about somebody, you know, one of your peers, somebody at work, somebody in your family? They may reject you. What if they make fun of us? What if they despise us? Those are things that we fear, things that we worry about. Well, let's look at a few examples from Scripture, and I won't have you turn to all of these, but I want us to get a sampling of what the Scriptures say, the different examples that they show us that this is a real problem that affects all of us in some way. And it doesn't matter whether you're one of the heroes of the faith, even somebody that has walked with the Lord for a long time, they still wrestle with the fear of men, the fear of people. And so I want you to see this and to be encouraged, knowing that men and women of the faith have struggled with this, do struggle with this, and be encouraged by that, and so that you don't feel like, you know, it's just you. A lot of times we feel that way, right? We think, you know, I'm the only one who is afraid to share the gospel. You know, because you hear those stories that people, you know, they may not mean to do it, but you get the idea from them that they never have a problem sharing the gospel with anybody. They're never afraid. And so then we feel like we're on this lower spiritual plane. But we're going to see that that's not at all the case. We all wrestle with this. Well, as we look at the examples, guess where it all started? You know, the garden, right? That's where the fear of man started. Adam and Eve, you know, in the Scriptures, it's hard for us to fathom, but they were naked. Okay? And everything was fine. Perfectly fine. Now, to us to think about that is like terrifying, right? Because of what happened. When they sinned, when they rebelled against the Lord, and they did what He told them not to do, all of a sudden their eyes were opened. Now, it was obvious that they were naked, okay? But it wasn't a problem before they disobeyed. All of a sudden it's a huge problem. It's actually terrifying. Why? Now they realize for the first time that the other person could reject them, could hurt them. They felt exposed. This exposure. You know, they were terrified of what the other person would think. They'd been together all this time. Everything was fine. And now all of a sudden they're scared to death of the gaze of the other person. And, you know, what they do immediately is they're like, I mean, they didn't have, you know, blankets or, you know, make a robe out of it. They didn't have, you know, a dresser full of clothes that they could go choose from or a closet or anything like that. There was nothing. And so they're looking around, okay, what's the biggest thing I can find to cover up with? Okay, fig leaves, you know. And they're like, well, one isn't big enough. We're going to sew these things together. And so they're frantically trying to sew them together, probably with some little vines or something like that, and making some, you know, Armani clothes out of them, you know. They're trying to, I got to get covered up. But you can imagine, though, it's still, you know, they're still, you know, trying to adjust and everything, and it's just still not, you know, working. You can imagine trying to cover up with leaves, you know. And it makes me think of something that Dave Barry said. It's like, you know, when you go to the hospital or you go in for whatever kind of doctor visit or something, and they make you wear one of those hospital gowns. Okay? I don't know if you've ever had to wear one of those. But he's right. He says they make you feel more naked than when you're actually naked. And they do. Because, you know, they clasp in the back or tie in the back. Not really. Not really. You know, because you're constantly, you know. And they do. They make. I could imagine that leaves were the same way. It's like, you know, this is just, you know, I still feel too exposed by somebody who had been around them all this time. And it wasn't just physical outward that they were worried about. What they were really worried about is they can now see the real me, and the real me now, after rebelling against the Lord, is not a very pretty person. Because I can only imagine, I know what I think about them now, and I can only imagine what they think about me. What if they can see my soul? What if they see the things I do, and they draw from that, is that what you really think? Are you really that horrible? They could hurt one another. They could ridicule, laugh at one another. They could reject one another now. That was terrifying. Well, you know, the leaves obviously didn't help too much. So when they heard their Creator coming, and now all of a sudden, to where this had been, you know, the highlight of the day when God showed up and walked with them in the garden, now they were terrified. Why? Because they knew that no amount of leaves was going to be able to cover them up anymore. Their sin was exposed to the gaze of their Creator. He could see to the depths of their soul, and he could see what wretched sinners they now were. And so God comes like he normally did, and he's looking for them, and he's like, where are you? Now, he knew, but he's drawing them out. Adam said, I hid myself. Why did you hide? I was afraid because I was naked. You were naked the last 1,000 times I came down here. Yeah, but now I have something to hide. Well, let's move later on into Genesis. We find Abraham, the father of the faithful, struggling with the fear of men. On two occasions, you remember, one of them in Genesis 20, we find him lying about his wife. You know, Sarah, tell them you're my sister because, you know, you're really pretty and they might want you and might kill me to get you. Now, I don't see, what did he think good was going to come out of this, really? You know, how is that really going to help? And on one of the occasions you found that, you know, it really did, well, it almost got really bad. Because, you know, Abimelech took Sarah. It's like, okay, you're going to be one of my wives now. And God jumped in there and intervened. So you touch her, you're dead. But Abraham was afraid. He was afraid of what people would do. He was afraid that they would hurt him. They would kill him. Hey, do you see what Solomon's talking about there? How it makes you think irrationally? Because somehow in Abraham's brain, and I'm not picking him because you and I do the same thing. Somehow in his brain, it sounded like the right thing to do. Oh, let's lie. That was no solution. You just made things worse. Now, you not only have you put your wife in harm's way, you put Abimelech in harm's way. You know, and he hadn't done anything wrong in that situation. Pretty woman, she's single. Okay, in that culture, okay, hey, make you my wife. But she wasn't really single. And, you know, in a sense, it's contagious. I mean, we really catch it because we're all inherited from Adam. But we also pick it up by exposure to other people. His son Isaac, you remember, in Genesis 26, did the same thing. Oh, Rebecca, you're really pretty, you know. So lie and say you're my sister. You know, just like his dad. You know, we think about fearful people. Gideon is somebody in the Old Testament that comes to mind, right? You know, you think about somebody who, he obeyed the Lord. Wonderful. But he was fearful. There was a situation in Judges 6 where the people of Israel, you know, the judges, that's such a sad time, where the people would just go off into idolatry, and then God would give them over to their enemies, and then they'd cry out to him, and he'd free them, and then as soon as they had a chance again, they went right back into idolatry. And so what had happened is the people of Israel had built this altar to Baal, a false god. And so Yahweh told Gideon, I want you to go tear that altar down, and I want you to build an altar to me, the one true God, and I want you to offer a bull on it. Now, Gideon knew that that's going to make people really mad. People in his own household and the people of the city. So he did obey the Lord, good, but he did it at night. Why? Because he was afraid of those people. Another terribly sad episode occurred in the reign of King Saul. We read in Numbers 13 about the Amalekites. Okay, so we fast forward now, where God tells King Saul through Samuel, I want you to go and I want you to wipe them out to the person. I want every person of the Amalekites dead, including all of their animals. Don't leave a one of them. Really clear commandment. Okay, so Saul and the Israelites, they go and they fight the Amalekites. And they wipe them all out, right? Nope. They kept the king, Agag, alive. And they're like, well, you know, those sheep over there, man, those are, they're like perfect. We can't kill them. And look at those cattle. I mean, okay, the ugly ones, yeah, we'll kill them. You know, the skinny ones, you know, okay, we can kill those, fine. But man, some of these put a lot of work into these and they fed them perfectly. Oh, this is great. And they didn't kill a bunch of them. You know, and Saul tried to lie. You know, he's telling Samuel, he's like, yeah, I did what the Lord said and killed all the animals. You know, it's like, well, what's the bleeding of the sheep I hear? Where's that coming from then? You know, and so then Saul finally confessed. You know, Samuel confronted him. Saul replied, though, in 1 Samuel 15:24, I have sinned. I have indeed transgressed the command of Yahweh and your words, Samuel. Why? Because I feared the people and I listened to their voice. So what Samuel points out to us there through Saul's example is that fearing people is disobedience. But fearing people also leads to more disobedience. And you know, we tend to think in terms like this. Really powerful people, they don't fear. They don't have problems with fearing people. You know, you think about, you know, you know, these huge football players or, you know, fighters and, you know, people that are extremely wealthy, people who have a lot of power, you know, they're in high up in government and they have no fear. Well, that's not what we find here. This is the king. He is over everybody in that country. He has the say over whether anybody in that country lives or dies. He says, I was afraid of the people. And who knows what was going on? The people were like, you know, Saul, you'd be stupid to kill these. I mean, these sheep are great, you know. We'll give them to the Lord, you know. Disobedience. His fear of people led him to disobey God. If you fear people, you do not fear the Lord as you should. Okay, well, is that just an Old Testament problem? No, let's look in the New Testament. Mark tells us in Mark 11:32 that the chief priests and the scribes, you know, whenever they came, you know, so sneakily to Jesus, and they're like, okay, you know, Jesus, you know, we want to ask you these questions, and they were trying to trap him, get him to say something that would get him killed. And so on one occasion here, he goes, I tell you what, let me ask you a question. What do you say about John the Baptist? They're like, you know, if we say this, you know, and they come back and they say, you know, we don't know. Because Mark tells us they were afraid of the multitude. See, at that point, the multitude, you know, they loved Jesus. And they knew that if they did something to make them mad, then they would be in trouble, the leaders. So they were afraid of men and what they would think. Think about the blind man's parents in John 9. Remember when we studied that? We went through the Gospel of John. And so you had this guy, he was born blind. And so the religious leaders, they interrogate him. Poor guy. I mean, he just got his sight back. Everybody ought to be having a party, you know? And they're interrogating him. And they're like, okay, you must not have been born blind because nobody, you know, Jesus couldn't have done that. So they call his parents in. Well, yeah, he was born blind. And they say, okay, well, what do you make of this? Like, ask him. He's of age. We're not saying anymore because they already knew that what the religious leaders had said, that if anybody is supporting Jesus, we're kicking them out of the synagogue, which meant you lose your job potentially, or nobody's going to buy whatever products you make. You're kicked out of everybody, your family. And they were afraid of the religious leaders and what they thought. Now, what about people who've been saved a long time and people who've been in ministry a long time? Surely they don't have a problem with fear, right? Well, what about Galatians 5, or chapter 2, verse 12? Paul tells us about one time when Peter, who usually is like fearless, right? He's the guy who just, you know, runs headlong into whatever. It's like, you know, jump first, think later, you know. And here he was, after he's been serving the Lord. Paul says he feared the party of the circumcision. In other words, he feared the Jews that had come from Jerusalem there, and Peter had been eating with, okay, Gentile Christian, fine, I'll eat with you. Jewish Christian, fine, I'll eat with you. Everything's cool. Then these guys come, and they're like, well, you know, we're Jews still, and we need to stay separate from Gentiles, you know. And so Peter's, oh, okay. And, you know, and so he distances himself from the Gentile Christians. And you remember Barnabas was even led astray in that. Paul had to rebuke Peter for it. Peter was afraid of what those influential Christians from Jerusalem, Jewish Christians from Jerusalem, thought. And here, after all this time serving the Lord, he still could be affected by the fear of man. So, in this lesson, I want to answer a few questions to help us understand fearing people, what that means. Why is it so serious? We're going to look at first. Why do we do it? Second, And what can we do about it? Now, that third one, we're only going to touch on that today. We still have a lot more to say about this, about the fear of man, and especially what we're to do about it. But I want to get us kind of started thinking about how do we respond to the fear of man, and let you chew on that for a little while, and then we'll come back and talk about that. I'll be gone for the next two Sundays, so when we come back, we're going to take up this further, but I hope you'll think about it some more. So what can we do about it? Now, first question, why is it so serious if we fear other people? I mean, isn't it just, okay, this is my problem? Why is God worried about this? Why are you, preacher, worried about this? Why is it so serious? Fearing people means that you don't fear God as you should. Now, maybe you fear God in this area, but over here, you fear people. So you're not fearing God in this area of your life as you should. And so try to think in those terms. Don't think in a complete, you know, all or nothing kind of way. Because there's going to be areas of your life where you're pleasing to the Lord, and there's other areas you still need to work on. And so in some of those areas, you may still need to deal with the fear of people. Fearing people is rebellion against the Lord. Fearing people is sin. And we're going to see this here now in Numbers 13 and 14. When Stephen read chapter 13 just a minute ago, did you notice where the people went wrong? Verse 31 of chapter 13, "But the men who had gone up with Caleb said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us.'" Now, that might have been a true statement. We don't know. The peoples of the land may have been more powerful militarily than the Jews. But what was wrong with that statement of theirs? That they are too strong for us. What's wrong with that statement? It might be true. There's something wrong with it. What is it? They left God out of the equation. They didn't even factor Him in here. The one who just delivered them from Egypt, a more powerful country than the ones they were facing. A bunch of disjointed tribes. Yahweh had just defeated the most powerful country at that time. Which seemed impossible, and he did the impossible. They didn't factor in God. Think about what they said in verse 33 as well. They said, "There also we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak." They're part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. Now, in their own sight, I mean, you know that, right? Where, you know, maybe you're around, you know, some, you know, professional basketball player or something, or college basketball, you know, they're giants, right? You know, I'm a short guy, you know. You get around, you know, big people like that, and, you know, it's, you know, you feel like a grasshopper, you know. But there may be other ways. Maybe it is, well, this person's like super smart, you know, and well, I'm me, you know. And other ways. Maybe they're real outgoing and comfortable in you know, among people. They're the life of the party, you know, and you're the one that tends to be the wallflower, you know, because you're just like, I'm just going to sit back here. And, you know. And so whatever way it is, you know, you feel like in your own eyes compared to that person that like this, that you're a grasshopper. But then they said, that's how we were in their eyes. I guess maybe these, you know, and these people were giants, and they're looking down. And the Jewish people in that day, they were about my height, probably thinner, but they were not big. Even Samson wasn't that big. He was not the big burly man we always make him out to be. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been much of a miracle, right? And how did these giants, you know, look at them? Yeah, you know. And so they were worried about what these people thought of them. They look at us as these puny little Jews. And they're the big Nephilim, you know, and mighty. And They were worried about what other people thought. They weren't at all concerned with what God thought. Again, they left God out of the situation. Because, okay, let's back up, and what should they have done? If they had kept God in the equation, they would say, you know, those guys are giants. You know, we're little short guys, and, you know, and they look down on us. And but you know what? To keep God in the equation, those people are less than grasshoppers to God, right? What does he say in Isaiah? The nations are just a drop in the bucket to God. Actually, in fact, Isaiah says, they're less than nothing. The chasm is so wide between nations and God. And so what they should have said is, you know, yeah, we look like grasshoppers to them. We felt like grasshoppers to them. But we serve a God who barely, are you even down there? You know, grains of sand gone. That's the God that they serve. That's the God who had just delivered them from Egypt. That's the God they should have kept factored into the situation, and they didn't. Well, let's see how they handled this. You already kind of got a taste of it in chapter 13. Now let's look at chapter 14. Numbers 14. Then they said, oh, you know, let's follow the Lord and we're going to go, right? No. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried. And the people wept that night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt. Or would that we had died in this wilderness. You see this irrational thinking, right? It's all emotional, is all it is. And why is Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? You know, they'd already forgotten what that was like. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel, and Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh. Of those who had spied out the land, only two, they tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh is pleased with us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh and do not fear the people of the land, for they shall be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and Yahweh is with us. Do not fear them. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. And then the glory of Yahweh appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And Yahweh said to Moses, how long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I've performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you, Moses, into a nation greater and mightier than they. But Moses said to Yahweh, then the Egyptians will hear of it. For by thy strength thou didst bring up this people from their midst. And they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that thou, O Yahweh, art in the midst of this people. For thou, O Yahweh, art seen eye to eye, while thy cloud stands over them, and thou didst go before them in a pillar of cloud by day, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now if thou dost slay this people as one man, then the nations who have heard thy fame will say, because Yahweh could not bring this people into the land which He promised them by oath, therefore He slaughtered them in the wilderness. In other words, God is not powerful enough to bring the people into the land. He can get them out of Egypt. He just can't get them into the land. But now I pray, let the power of Yahweh or of the Lord be great, just as thou hast declared. Yahweh is slow to anger. He's quoting back to God what God had already said to him. Yahweh is slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But He will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations. Pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of thy loving kindness. You see, he keeps quoting back to God, God's character. Just as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. You've been forgiving them all this time. Forgive them again. So Yahweh said, I have pardoned them according to your word. But indeed, as I live, all the earth will be filled with the glory of Yahweh. Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, they shall by no means see the land which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who spurned me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites live in the valleys. Turn tomorrow and set out to the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. And Yahweh spoke to Moses and Aaron, and saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who are grumbling against me? I have heard the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, as I live, says Yahweh, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will surely do to you. Your corpses shall fall in this wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to your complete number, from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you shall not come into the land in which I swore to settle you, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses shall fall in this wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they shall suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you spied out the land, 40 days, for every day you shall bear your guilt a year, even 40 years. And you shall know my opposition. I, Yahweh, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they shall die. As for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, and who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing out a bad report concerning the land. And remember, these men, Stephen read to us in chapter 13, these were all leaders in their tribe. These are not just, fresh young guys they pulled at. These are leaders, okay? Even those men who brought out the bad report, the very bad report of the land, they died by a plague before Yahweh. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive out of those men who went to spy out the land. And when Moses spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people mourned greatly. In the morning, however, they rose up early and they went up to the ridge of the hill country, saying, here we are, we have indeed sinned, but we will go up to the place which Yahweh has promised. Moses said, why then are you transgressing the commandment of Yahweh when it will not succeed? Do not go up, lest you be struck down before your enemies, for Yahweh is not among you. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites will be there in front of you, and you will fall by the sword, inasmuch as you have turned back from following Yahweh, and Yahweh will not be with you. But they went up heedlessly to the ridge of the hill country. Neither the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh nor Moses left the camp. They went by themselves, left the Lord behind. And then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in that hill country came down, and they struck them and beat them down as far as Hormah. Because they didn't fear the Lord as they should, they feared the people of the land. And it was called here in chapter 14, verse 9, rebellion against the Lord. You see, it's sin. They rebelled against God. Fear of man is rebellion against God. We need to remember that whenever we fear other people. Their fear led them to disobey the Lord, to rebel against Him. And as we saw in Proverbs 29, earlier, their fear of people caused them to become anxious, overcome with dread, and behaving irrationally. They panicked, they talked about stoning their leaders, and then when they realized they sinned, instead of repenting, they tried to go fight their enemies without God's help. You see how irrational they were? Let's just go do it, and they ran out there and got slaughtered. So why do we fear people? Well, Ed Welch gives us several reasons why we fear people. This is from his book, When People Are Big and God Is Small. He says sometimes we're afraid of them. This is what happened here, right? They were afraid. Okay, these people are going to, they're giants. They're going to kill us. We hold people in awe. We look at them for whatever reason. It may not be because they're so tall. It may be because they're so smart or so popular or whatever. We're controlled by them. Do you realize that when you fear other people, they control you? You hand them the controls of your heart when you fear other people. We worship them. Yes, it's that sad. We put our trust in them. And then this one, which is really at the root of it all. We need them. We need them. I need you to affirm me. I need you to accept me. And I'm terrified that you might not. Maybe you see one or more of those in your experience. You know, Job's friends, they were more harm, I think, than good. They were suggesting that he was hiding some sin and he wasn't repenting of it. And he kept it secret in his heart. And he responded to them. He goes, are you saying that I do what I know most people do? Where I hide some sin that I've done because I am terrified of what other people are going to think? People typically hide their sin because they're afraid of other people who might treat them with contempt if they knew the truth. Job 31, 34. That's what he was saying. Are you saying that's what I'm doing? That because I have some sin that I'm hiding it because I'm afraid of what other people are going to think of me if they knew the truth? And of course, he rejected that. It wasn't true. But he explains for us what's typical. And he said, are you saying that I'm like Adam? You see, he ties back in with what we talked about earlier. The first instance of the fear of men in the garden. He says, are you saying I'm like Adam and I went hiding because of my sin? And I love that our last song is going to kind of pick that theme up of the garden and the problems that ensued from that and then the remedy in the Lord Jesus. And I hope you pay attention to that when we sing. Okay, what do we do about it? Well, we're just going to briefly touch on this. We've got a lot more to say in future lessons. You know, it's not a sin to be afraid when there's a legitimate source of a threat. If a bear is chasing you, you ought to be afraid. If you're in battle and the enemy is shooting at you, you should be afraid. But where do we cross over the line into sin? Again, Ed Welch explains it this way. He says, the fear of man is the sinful exaggeration of a normal experience. Yeah, whatever's causing fear, you might legitimately be afraid. But what happens is we exaggerate that, don't we? It's not so much that they might hurt me. It's that, well, then they might laugh at me or other people may think poorly of me. They might reject me. You see, we exaggerate it because we need them. We need something from them, we feel. He says it's natural fear run amok. But he also points out that natural fear needs to be regulated by faith. You need to have something there that regulates this so that whenever, you know, you're in battle and people are shooting at you, trying to kill you, how do you not just lose it and just run, la, la, you know, and then you get shot? How do you respond? Lord, you're in control. I'm in your hands. I'm terrified because it's scary thinking about getting shot. But I'm going to trust you and know that you have my situation in your hands. And if I get shot at your will, then you'll see me through it. Now I can think back to what they trained me to do. They trained me how to shoot, how to defend myself, how to you know, stand together, you know, with my fellow soldiers and fight as a unit, you see. And I can think clearly because I'm doing I'm responding to this by faith. You see, whenever natural fear intersects our life, what happens is it causes a fork in the road. And one road, one path, is the one where fears run amok. It's where we either are paralyzed into inaction or we just act without even thinking and praying about it. And the other is the road that leads us to trust in the Lord, where we say, God's got this. And it might hurt a lot, but He's got this. He knows what He's doing. He's good. He's wise. He's faithful to His promises, and He's strong enough to pull this off and see me safely to heaven. Remember that the fear of people lays out a snare for us. It leads to bad decisions. It leads to sin. What we must do is bring our faith to bear on the situation. We must bring God back into the equation. We must remind our soul of those things that are true and call our soul to trust in those, to rest in those. A couple quick examples. We looked last time at Psalm 56, verses 3, 4, and 11. Because of his trust in Yahweh, David was able to be strong in the midst of trouble. He says, I've already put my trust in Yahweh. And he told us there about reasons why he trusted Yahweh. Can you hear his faith when he says here, in God I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? In other words, they can't do anything to me that God hasn't already ordained. Faith. David again in Psalm 3, verse 6. He reminds himself that Yahweh personally is a shield around him. Not that God has set up shields around me. God himself is the shield around me. And can you hear his faith? Because of that, he says, I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. So, okay, yeah, those people are around me, and that's scary, if you will. But I know that Yahweh is the shield around me. And if he doesn't want any darts getting through, they're not getting through. We've only begun to uncover the biblical help that we have. First, you must choose to fear the Lord. Fearing anyone else is sin. But if you fear the Lord, you will trust Him. When you're faced with the temptation to fear people, remind yourself of why you trust the Lord. Remind your soul of those reasons, the things you know that are true about God. And apply those to the situation. Bring them to bear on that situation. Recite the facts on which your faith is built. Recite how great and good is your God. How great is our God? He's so great that He defeated sin that had alienated us from Him. How good is our God? He reconciled us to Himself, even though we were sinners. And He did both of those, and you see His greatness and His goodness, and they came together in that one event that we here celebrate now in the Lord's table. He did both of those through that one event when He gave His Son to die in our place on the cross. Think about how great and how good is our God, because that's the basis of our faith. We need that to bring to bear on the situations we face, the fears we face. And chew on that for the next few weeks.